Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Do you understand?
No, it makes absolute sense.
So really for us, it's pick a great site, put together the right architecture so that the vines will be in the most balance given the, you know, rootstock, variety, clone that you want to use on that site with that exposure. And then the job of the viticulturist is to just do little tweaks. You know, I used to think I could control a lot more than year after year. I learned I have a lot less control than I think. Mother Nature is much more in control than we are. And I think it's, for me, when I approach it now, I understand that it's more about shepherding the site, balancing the site, making these few little adjustments through the growing season so that that vine is really balanced and it's producing beautiful grapes that don't need anything added to them, you know, to make a great wine.
I'm actually fascinated by the comments that you made earlier about sort of this futuristic approach. When you see a piece of land and you do the studies, you know, the soil pits, and I'm sure it's an exhaustive process where a lot of science is involved. How much of it is science at the end of the day, and how much of it is that vision that you have in your mind when you're considering all the factors? So how much of it is the art and intuition?
I think the more you do it, the more just, you know, you kind of know from experience. Mm-hmm. I think you learn from great farmers that have done it before you. You learn from mistakes you make. You learn from successes that you have. So, you know, how much, who knows, but I don't know what percentage. But I think, you know, I think it's some of each. I mean, I think it's some of each. You need both. You absolutely need both. I mean, we have great science. Let's use it.
Right.
But let's not let that, you know, take away the experience that we have and the sight that you have.
Yeah, but it's that projection, that process that really fascinates me to no end. Sort of like when a critic tastes wines out of a barrel and can conceptualize how they would perform years later. In that same vein, you look at a piece of land and you're able to project into the future what it would be like 5, 10, 20, 100 years from now. Something in your mind's eye, you know, has to be compelling enough at the end of the day to make a lot of those incremental decisions.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
And speaking of the specific selections, of course, Napa Valley, as economic reality would dictate, is a Cabernet country. And there's much debate about that. Meaning, is it really the best varietal overall? I'm sure that, at least from what I've heard, it's an appropriate variety in a lot of spots, but maybe not all of them. So what is your perspective on that?
Is
Napa Cabernet country indeed and should follow that?
Looks like it. you know, I think it's proven that it does really well here.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I'm sure other varieties would do well here.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see as, you know, the next decade and 20 years and 30 years and, you know, whoever comes after us to farm these spots, what they like to drink, what they want to drink, what the weather is then. You know, I certainly don't have a crystal ball, but I think for right now, it's a great variety for here. Why not? People love these varieties. We love growing them. I think they do really well here. But certainly if someone said, you know, I'm going to try to do something completely different, I'd listen to what they had to say. I don't know.
Well, listen to your own affinity about Cabernet Franc. That's what kind of got the two of you together, the mutual love of Cab Franc, which, you know, is instructive in and of itself. There must be something very special about that variety iteration in Napa Valley that compelled you to start a project.
Yeah, well, that variety has done really well, as you know, in the right bank of Bordeaux as well. And,
exactly.
You know, I think it grows well where Cabernet Sauvignon grows well. you know, that was less of a gamble, I think, than maybe saying, like, I want to grow Val de Gay in the Napa Valley or something. You know, I don't know. But yeah. But I think, I think that's part of the human... You know, the human instinct is to know what's working and keep doing that. And then there's another side of that that says, let's try something new. You know, I mean, I think this is part of great part of humanity is, you know, what are we missing? Yeah. I ask myself that all the time, like, what am I missing? What can I keep learning? How can we do this better? We try to encourage our team to think about those questions every single day. You know, what are we missing? What could we do better? I think as society, we have to keep asking those questions to continue to move forward as opposed to move back.
I think that's a great teachable moment here in life philosophy, and that's what makes you a cool person and a critical thinker, which I think is absolutely crucial, not just for thriving, but the very survival of humanity depends on that. And it's applicable not just in wine, but in the rest of human experience. I am, and especially with somebody with your reputation, you both are renowned for your craft. And the fact that you're continuously asking yourself questions, I'm impressed by that. Because an argument could be made that you could just keep repeating your successes and move forward very nicely based upon what you've built so far, but that's not how you are.
I'd be too bored. I think that would be really, quite frankly, just boring. I think there's so much out there to discover, and I wish I had another 24 hours for every 24 hours I have in every day, because there's so many cool things that we could be doing. You know, you look out your window, I'm looking at all these, you know, these plants out here, and thinking, you know, where can I stuff a few more plants in, try a few more things? I don't know. I that's definitely not my my philosophy, is just to sit around and be happy with what I've done and pat myself on the back. I think there's definitely a lot more that we could do, and I think we can do better. I mean, for sure. You can always do better.
Absolutely, and that's how you create value, is by asking yourself, what can I do better? Where can I excel? And obviously you don't shy away from challenge, so that brings up a question. What has been the most challenging for you, project-wise or wine-wise or vintage? You pick.
I guess probably... well, it's funny that you say that right after that, because the challenge for me is saying no to things that I want to try, and because just time.
Yeah.
It's all about time. I mean... I think being organized with my time is really important, because that's the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is definitely, there's a finite amount of time in every day, which is frustrating, but unless somebody invents a time machine, I think we all struggle with that, but particularly someone as busy, as in demand as you are.
Well, I don't think I'm any busier than anyone else. I just have a lot of interests and a lot of things I'd like to do. So I don't know, as far as what I would do differently or what mistakes I've made. I've made a lot of mistakes, I mean, for sure. But I feel like every single mistake is an opportunity to try to figure out how to not make that mistake again and do something, you know, and learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
We've made a lot of mistakes.
Good to know. Because so far I'm surrounded by perfection, so it's hard to see the mistakes. But
no, definitely not. And I don't want to try to pretend that this thing is so precious or anything. I mean, I like to think that it's really real and that we're just like everybody else, just working hard. You know, you always want to spend more time with your family. You always want to spend more time doing what you love. I'm blessed in that. I love my job. Mm. So I just feel so happy that I found something that excites me every day. I don't love every single thing about my job, for sure. but most of it I love. And yeah, I mean, I guess I just wish I could spend more time doing other things and hanging out with my kids and all that, you know?
Yes, totally understandable and makes a ton of sense. You mentioned earlier that you never knew that you had a scientist in you, that clearly you started out pursuing an arts, literary career, and that I think, to quote you, the skies have opened when you're walking Cronus Vineyard, Kathy's Vineyard. How did that transition come about? Where did that process of self-discovery occur that compelled you to go an entirely different direction?
But I don't know. I guess I just have that part of me that's not afraid of change. So I just went for it. But I think that's, you know, being able to see when something lights you up. Mm-hmm. Is something I, you know, I hope my kids have, and I hope they figure that out. I think they both do, but I look at them, you know, always wondering, because I feel like that's one of the best assets that I have, is being able to see something and fall in love with it, and know that I'm in love with it, and going for it. So yeah, I mean, I think it's just part of us. It's listening too. I mean, I think, you know, that part of yourself that's intuition. That inner voice. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I feel like the closer I am to nature, the more intuition I feel. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the more I'm sitting in front of my computer and technology and all that stuff, I feel like that gets turned off for me. So I have to get out, you know, in the vineyards, in the gardens, and go for a hike, whatever, get in the ocean. You know, I feel like I can open up that, I mentioned the third eye before, you know, that whole intuitive part of myself, more when I am closer to nature. And I think that allows you to listen inside mm-hmm. more and know mm-hmm. whether you can handle something, whether you really love it enough, or whether you just think you love it, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, does that make sense? Is that too woo-woo?
No, not at all. But what you're describing, I'm just listening very carefully, it's a sense of empowerment. And you derive that from your surroundings that are made by Mother Nature. Is that an accurate perception?
It's certainly a vehicle. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a vehicle for me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
we are, I mean, we are a part of nature.
Yeah, whether we realize it or not. It's a symbiotic process.
Yeah, I mean, as humans, we're just one more animal on the planet. So just like whatever else is crawling around out there, I mean, we're pretty much the same thing. We're just able to talk and articulate our thoughts. So I feel like, and they probably are too, we just can't understand them, but I mean, maybe we're getting really at a nano level here, but I feel like, yeah, absolutely, that isn't separate. I guess you said, you know, is it separate? I don't think it's separate. I think mm-hmm. we're all part of nature, and when we tap back into it, we can hear ourselves better.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful sentiment, because I think we do get detached from ourselves because we get caught in the minutiae, and what you're describing is connecting back to that. And I think that's why wine is such a powerful medium, because it causes people to stop, sit down, have a glass of wine, and have a conversation. And as much as we think we're talking to other people, we're also having a conversation with ourselves, aren't we? And wines are facilitated the best are the wines with soul and character and elegance. And, you know, when you notice that there's something really special that's worth discussing, it's not just a consumptive process, it's an intellectual, cerebral process, isn't it?
I think it can be, yeah, but I think it can also just be fun. And that connection time with the people around mm-hmm. you is really fun too. Mm-hmm. I mean, being able to let go and not like, totally go into all that with the mm-hmm. wine is also a beautiful freeing thing. Mm-hmm. I think it can happen with the teas. I mean, I fell in love with the teas so much because that whole sensory process, both aromatically and texturally, in tea is very similar to wine. It could be with food. You know, I think all those things kind of, again, they're connecting us with that piece of nature.
Yeah.
And again, opening up that part of ourselves that allows us to be, you know, connected again.
You anticipated my next question, which is about this beautiful tea I've been sipping. I saw the garden and it looks magnificent. You kind of answered it already, that there's a lot of properties to tea that are very similar to wine, but how did that project begin? I know this property had already natural way to facilitate it, but why did you pursue it?
No, we actually planted all that.
Okay.
None of this was on the property.
So this
at
is all.
All
you're doing entirely.
Yeah.
There's no, okay.
I've always loved drinking tea. My mom and I would have our special time in the afternoon when we'd sit down and have tea. Mm-hmm. So I've been drinking tea for my whole life, and she would often just kind of grab a handful of fresh mint or, you know, some little flowers that she was growing and mm-hmm. throw them in a pot like this, and we would have a fresh tea on in the afternoon. And I loved that time with her, and I just loved the taste of it. And I've been growing little, you know, smaller gardens for the last 25 years since we've been in the Napa Valley. But, you know, and then I would dry that and give it to my friends for Christmas and mason jars and stuff. And then it just got to the point where I was like, I think I might want to do this for real. And people would ask for it, or they'd say, hey, I'd love to send that to a friend. Can you make me some more? And then I just decided to do it.
Wow. So this is available. Where can people purchase it?
So on the people can purchase it on the website, mm-hmm. Erdatea.com. We also have the teas at Auberge du Soleil at the spa, and Blackberry Farm in Tennessee is having it at their Blackberry Mountain property in the spa there, and in the shop there, and they're doing some fun stuff with it in the restaurant. So yeah, a couple places around.
Well, it's so delicious. You spoiled me. I'm going to have a hard time drinking other teas now. Why Erda? What does it signify, the name?
Erda is the earliest word for earth. And the Earth Mother Goddess, you know, describes that word for the Earth Mother Goddess. And just that, it's kind of simple name.
Wow,
really simple
no idea,
name.
But yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Throughout this conversation, your family came up a lot. Clearly, you have a very close relationship with your mom, and so much of your upbringing kind of facilitated who you are now. And that empowerment piece, that getting to know yourself, and as a parent, I'm sure that is something you hold as a value for your children. Do you have any advice, for lack of a better word, like from philosophical perspective, raising human beings, being a good human yourself, what is important to you?
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, I guess with my girls, I have two daughters, they're... Mm-hmm. 16 and 18, and they're really lovely humans. My advice to them, I don't know, you'd have to ask them. I've had a lot of advice.
Yeah.
But I think just, you know, again, be real, be grounded, and try to find what you love and do that, because, you know, you do it a lot of hours. Spend a lot of hours working.
Yeah.
And you could spend those hours doing something that really lights you up or not. So find that thing. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, it doesn't matter at all what it is. It's just as long as you like it.
I think that's great advice. I know I'm going to take it. I'm fortunate enough to do what I like, but it's not something that's intuitive necessarily. A lot of us do what, you know, we
it
thought
seems
we
like
should
it
do.
Is because you're a very good question asker.
Thank you. Thank you.
And no, listener. You're a really good listener.
I'm very, very fortunate to sit down with people like you. You know, even by osmosis, learning from folks like you that are so close to the land and absorb it with their very being, and you exude it. There's a certain luminosity that happens that I just get very lucky to bask in and be around, and hopefully become a little wiser myself. I wanted to ask you about Napa Valley, which of course is your home now. And it's such a revered place because it's stunning. I sometimes jokingly say God had a very good day and he made Napa. It's just so darn perfect. I've been coming here for decades, and I always get little butterflies. And it's so important to protect and preserve that sacred spot. And you work with the very land that is Napa Valley. I wanted to ask about your thoughts of how you watched it, you know, evolve over the years. Do you have any concerns? Is there something, how do you see the future of this region?
I'm really optimistic. In general, I'm an optimistic person, and I think I really love seeing what I'm seeing in the Napa Valley. I think a lot of, there's a whole, you know, younger generation of people coming on and really wanting to take care of the Napa Valley. I think more and more vineyards are becoming organically farmed, which is a big part of what I'd like to see happen in the Napa Valley. I'd love to see the Napa Valley be 100% certified organic. I think that is, to me, you know, that would be great assurance that so we're going to give back to our soils and build this place and leave it kind of better than we found it. And I'd love to see that happening more, and happy to help people facilitate that. I love what the Napa Valley Land Trust is doing, because we have an agricultural preserve in the Napa Valley, but that doesn't guarantee, that could be voted out. So I like what the Land Trust is doing, because they're making sure that land stays in ag, and I think that's important. I think it'd be fun to see, you know, different crops. Like I love having the tea and the vegetables with the grapes, because I think, you know, there are a lot of, you know, a lot of benefits to all three together. I know that there are some great flower farmers popping up in the Napa Valley, which I love seeing. Seth Chapin, he's been farming flowers here in the Napa Valley and doing a cut flower business that's beautiful. Jamie from Monkey Flower is also doing that. I think that's great. There are people making cheese. There are people that have some small livestock. I think it's fun to see any agricultural use. I don't know how much that'll catch on, but I like what I'm seeing. Yeah, we're really blessed. You're absolutely right. This is a beautiful spot, and the proximity to the bay, and I just, I'm all for it.
That's great. Let's talk about your brand for a second, because we kind of touched upon it, but I just want you to tell the listeners how many wines you make and just about your portfolio and philosophy, a little bit about that.
Sure. So for Favia, we make four Napa Valley wines, two Cabernet Franc based wines and two Cabernet Sauvignon based wines, one each from Oakville and Coombsville. And those kind of build the, you know, those are the four main wines that we make in the Napa Valley. We also make three wines from Amador County, from Ann Kramer's Vineyard, which I love, Shake Ridge Ranch. It's a beautiful spot that Andy and I have been lucky enough to work with since before it was planted, and helped Ann kind of get that going, picking our rootstocks and clones and stuff like that we wanted to work with. And we make Viognier, Syrah, and a Grenache Mourvèdre blend with a little bit of Syrah from Anne's Vineyard. And then we make a new wine from the Napa Valley called Carbone, after Antonio Carbone.
Oh, it's named after the property, former owner,
Yeah, we want to have that wine be kind of a fun homage to Antonio and his family, who came here in the 1870s and settled the Napa Valley and farmed grapes, and also, as I mentioned, farmed vegetables and other crops, olive oil, nuts. And we also actually have a walnut orchard and olive oil.
Oh, we didn't mention that. And there's such beautiful old trees. Wow. It was just a pleasure to look at. And I know you have some crops from them, so that's something also the listeners can come after.
Buying a little
bit of your walnuts,
So the Carbone wine is great, because that wine is $75. We haven't had a wine at that price point. And that's you know, just a great accessible wine and delicious. And that's a blend of Cab and Cab Franc and Petit Verdot. and sometimes Merlot. And that wine is available across the country through distribution. So it's really able to get out there, and we're excited about that. And, you know, that wine for us is really about telling stories about, you know, these folks that were here before us, and then who's going to be after us, we don't know, but at this point, but, you know, kind of about the place and less about, less about us. You know, it's really more about who was here before and who's here after, yeah, but it's really about the Napa Valley and blending a really beautiful wine from these vineyards. And then we have another brand called Room Wines, which was started in 2010 by Andy and I and our associate winemaker, Jessica Tarpey.
Okay.
And that's a really fun brand because what we do every year is just do a red and white experiment. We never repeat them, and they're from anywhere we want. So we do either a viticultural experiment or an enological experiment. We try new appellations, different winemaking techniques. So we've done everything from Marin County Pinot. We did Albarino from Calaveras, an old vine Zinfandel from the top of Mount Beater. We've done a 7-year barrel-aged skin fermented Semillon. We've done, you know, it's just kind of, the idea with Room is to explore and have fun and take ourselves out of our box so that we can make sure that we're sharp for everything else. You know, we mentioned kind of, you know, making Cabernet, we're Cabernet Franc in a Cabernet house here.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that if there's something to learn from trying to make Zinfandel or Riesling, we've made a Riesling, you know, or a Mourvedre, we can learn that. We can take whatever those little tiny things that open that other place in the brain and take it back to what we're doing. And that's really fun because we can get those wines out by the glass. Their whites are usually around 28 and the reds around 42.
Oh, great price points.
Yeah, really fun price points. That's a joy.
Oh, it's always changing. I want to taste all of them now. Yeah, you know, and of course that's not possible because they change every.
We've done 16 so far.
My goodness.
Yeah, since 2010, and every year we have a really fun time kind of figuring out where we're going to be and what we're going to do. So
that is so cool. So how can people find them? Is it something they just have to ask their?
We have a website.
Okay.
From Room. Yeah.
Okay.
And Favia Wines also is a great website.
Perfect.
With tons of information. We have a page for each wine, and then there's a link that says winemaker notes that you can click on and get information about the vineyards and the blends and the story of the wine, and that can be printed if trade's interested in showing that to their team or whatever.
Wow, I didn't realize that you had so many, and I probably arguably should be aware of everything you do, but I've learned something just right then and there. There's so many more things that I was aware of.
Yeah, it's fun.
So those of you
that's what I meant when I said I wish I had more time to do more.
No, I don't know when you find the time. I'm starting to wonder when you sleep, because that's a lot right there. Blending really intrigues me, and I think a lot of people that are listening are fascinated by the fact that you can take components and there's potentially infinite number of combinations and create what makes the most sense to you. I was going to say perfect blend, but I bet there's no such thing. And given that you work with Andy and you're both, you know, so renowned in the industry for your skill set, how does that work?
It's very easy. I have, we have a clear division of labor.
Okay.
So I take care of all the vineyard and viticulture, and Andy takes care of all the winemaking.
Ah.
So, and he's really the master blender for sure. He's amazing. I am always in awe of, you know, we've been doing this together for 25 years, and I tell you, like, every time I sit and blend with him, I'm more amazed at what he can do. I mean, it's unbelievable. He has this, like, inner sense for how these things, you mentioned, like, critics can taste a wine and know what it's going to taste like in numerous years, and he goes barrel to barrel. We make, you know, we ferment in stainless and concrete and wood and, you know, all these different vessels. So we have those different types of lots to blend, but we also have barrel-to-barrel lots, because once you barrel down, each barrel will give a different character to the wine, given their tannin and toast level and all that fun stuff. So we sit down to blend our, you know, our four Napa Valley wines with multiple lots and components to put in. And he just has a lot of experience from doing it for many years, but also he just has a great gift, I think, for blending and for being able to project what one single ingredient will do to the whole. You know, that sum of the parts, kind of a brain. Mm-hmm. He has a really scientific brain, for sure, but he also has that ability to kind of blend at a level that I've seen very few people be able to do. So it's pretty awesome to watch him. I'm always, like I said, I'm in awe of him. He's awesome.
And this is another instructive moment. 25 years you've watched that, and you speak with such admiration about the man you're married to. That's quite an achievement right there.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. I mean, we lucked out finding each other.
Wow. I'm going to rub you for good luck, because clearly it's overflowing.
Knock on wood. You never know.
No, it's really wonderful to spend time with you. There's so many different... I could ask you a million questions. It would never be enough. But there's so many wonderful aspects and alleys, you know, in this conversation that we went down. And there's just overall such a huge value proposition, not just in what you do for your clients viticulturally, but the fact that you're so connected to the land, and the fact that I keep hearing that a good winemaker is only as good as his willingness to open himself up to be a vineyardist and to learn from the land. And you have all of that built in, even though he has used a secret weapon. I get a strong sense that Andy is a vineyardist first and foremost.
For sure.
And then a blender on top of it. That's almost superhuman.
Secret weapon.
Yes. It's really almost impossible odds that you have the confluence of all of those things happening, and that you can craft from that place such immense self-awareness and skill set and experience and talent. So your wines have to be pretty special regardless. I mean, I can't imagine that based upon that alone, even those of you that haven't tasted it on paper, like, how cool would that wine, would those wines be? There's so much in them already. What do you drink at home?
Wow, that's always a question that's so hard, because we drink so many different things.
I bet.
We love to drink, Andy's a coffee drinker in the morning. I drink tea in the morning, and then I usually drink tea all day. And then he loves beer.
Okay.
And we drink a lot of beer.
Okay.
And wine. I love white wines. I love, my fancy wines that I love to drink. Great Chablis. I love Chardonnay from cooler regions. Andy and I both love Cabernet Franc. So
of course,
if we have, friends buying, we love Right Bank wines. We love wines from the Rhone Valley. We love, Italian reds and Italian whites. I mean, luckily in the Napa Valley, we don't have to drink one thing every night, because so many wines, you know, just being in this business, we're blessed in that so many wines just kind of cross our paths.
Sure, absolutely.
So we don't have to drink the same wines all the time. That's the fun thing about wine, is there's something for everyone and for every occasion.
Exactly.
You know, we make a tiny bit of wine and it's great for certain circumstances, but I would never presume that's the only wine everyone would ever want to drink. You know, what a bore that would be, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's so exciting that there are, you know, wines from all around the world and all, even just all around the valley or, you know, all around California. I mean, it's endless what people can drink, and that is so exciting. And I think, you know, from a beginner to be able to dig in and start learning what, you know, I think beginners in wine, I love to watch them get confident with their own ability to be able to articulate what they like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the barrier. I think sadly, the wine industry has done a terrible job of making people feel comfortable, beginners feel comfortable. And then that whole pretension of wine, I think, is really is really a shame. I would love for, you know, the future wine industry people to dispel that. Mm-hmm. I think making people educated about wine and forgetting all the pomp and circumstance would be a great thing. I think that ability to be able to articulate what you like to a sommelier or a retailer, mm-hmm. Allows someone to choose which wines and to be able to discover which wines they will like and not waste a lot of money and time.
I think that's great advice, and it's a actually great sentiment to end on. I would urge you guys to actually go to the website, learn the stories, and in general, hopefully you'll get to taste some of the 5-year wines, because they're more than worthwhile. But go out and get a bottle of wine. Like, seriously, it's homework tonight. I want you to go and get a bottle of wine. You know, if you have a great advisor in your wine shop, or if you just want to randomly grab one, I think even if you don't fall in love with it, it's a good thing. Thank you very much for sitting down with me and sharing your beautiful stories and this extraordinary space. I'm very thankful, and hope to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.